Chapter 1. Stephen. July 2nd. Mirth. Stephen crouched behind the tall plants watching his quarry. It had taken him a half hour to creep this close, and his wait was nearly over. The creature was only a few yards away, upwind, eating a pumpkin, facing away from the hunter. With any luck, Stephen would be able to leap on its back and truss it up to be carted away and released far from any towns or farms. If not, well, things can get ugly fast, and it would be better not to dwell on those possibilities. His sword was at his side, but he hoped it wouldn't be needed today. Stephen had a fondness for these creatures, despite his occupation and the fact that most people consider them pests. He silently grasped his coiled rope and rose up to get a good look at the chicken he was stalking. It was about 5 feet tall, with scaly, leathery skin, fierce talons, on long, sturdy legs, and 8 feet of leathery, lightly feathered wings. Stephen froze as the creature lifted its head from the melon it was eating and looked off into the distance. The afternoon sunlight glistened off the slimy seeds and pulp hanging from its beak with its twin rows of razor-sharp teeth.
Someone shouted, "Oh, crap! That's a dragon!" And the voice echoed across the valley.
The chicken, a small breed of dragon, leaped up, saw Stephen standing little more than an arm's length away, squawked, and spun around to face him. Both froze for a moment in utter confusion. Stephen was trying to figure out what idiot had shouted at this most inopportune time, when Mrs. Marlin yelled,
"Of course it's a dragon, you moron! That's why you're here! You're the pest exterminator!"
Stephen hated that term. He preferred to be called Dragon Hunter. But that was neither here nor there. He suddenly realized that the exclamation responsible for destroying his hunt had erupted from his own mouth. He knew this to be true, but it felt as though someone else must be guilty. Being possessed was a terrifying thought to Stephen, but he had more immediate issues. A powerful, upset dragon was a mere 4 feet away, trying to decide how to react to this newfound threat. They stared at each other for a few more seconds and simultaneously made their decisions.
Yeah!
Squawk!
The dragon attacked as Stephen dove into the underbrush. Stephen had noticed the way the dragon's head turned before his attack and dashed to the right as the dragon's beak flew inches to the left of his shoulder. He dove low so that only the soft back edge of the creature's wing brushed him rather than its bony forearms, which were attached to powerful chest muscles. He tumbled through the plants and turned to see the dragon struggling to pry the massive pumpkin it had skewered off its beak in place of Stephen's head.
Stephen couldn't help laughing at the miserable and confused dragon. The creature was thrashing about, bashing the pumpkin on the ground, but each crash seemed to push the melon farther over its beak so that now it nearly covered its entire head. For a moment, Stephen thought it just might be possible to tackle the creature. After all, he was 17 years old, 6 feet tall, and powerfully built. Then the dragon's head smashed into a nearby mango tree, and the pumpkin exploded off its face. Mrs. Marlin was shouting advice like, "Grab its leg!" and "Get around behind it!" and "Don't let it trample my azaleas!" This advice was anything but helpful, and must have annoyed the beast as well, because both of them turned and screamed at the woman at the same time.
There was a momentary peace in the garden as she scurried off, but the two combatants soon faced each other again.
Now, everyone knows that nobody outruns an angry dragon. However, nobody in their right mind would just stand there. Stephen ran. He zigzagged across the garden as the enraged beast attacked again and again. Dragons will always attack when cornered or startled, but they usually avoid fighting once there is a way out. Not this one. Perhaps he had eaten some of Mrs. Marilyn's hot chili peppers, or maybe her screeching commentary was getting on his nerves. She was shouting instructions and insults again from a safer distance. Whatever the reason, this dragon was angry, and it didn't care how much of Mrs. Marilyn's garden it destroyed in its attempt to get Stephen. Down went the string beans. Crash went the papaya tree. Squish went the strawberries.
"No!" screamed Mrs. Marlin.
The same blueberry bushes and large pepper plants that had masked Stephen's approach were now making it difficult for the dragon to get a clear shot at him as he scrambled across the garden. However, Stephen realized he wasn't going to get away when he became entangled in a large mass of zucchini and pumpkin vines. it was time to make one final stand. The dragon leaped in another thundering charge as Staven drew his sword and rolled away. He meant to sever one of the beast's legs to stop its destructive rampage before killing it, but the dragon tripped on a vine and Staven's sword connected with the top of its long neck as the creature fell forward. The long, heavy, enchanted sword decapitated the poor animal, and its head flew off into the tomato patch. This was a most unfortunate result. Chiggins are not the brightest of creatures, and much of their bodies can continue to function for a surprisingly long time without the use of their pathetically small brains. In fact, chiggins can aimlessly run for hours or even days with their heads cut off, which was what happened today. For 10 minutes, a slightly less than 5-foot-tall dragon stomped, trampled, dug, tore, and utterly destroyed the rest of Mrs. Marlin's garden until its random path managed to take it through the garden gate. Chiggins can run faster than any person in the open and are impossible to catch until they tire or somehow manage to trap themselves. Staven sat among the smashed vegetation trying to catch his breath and figure out what had just happened. The screams, crashes, and general sounds of mayhem and destruction echoing from the nearby farms and gardens were not helping. Meanwhile, Mrs. Marlin was shrieking about Staven being an incompetent idiot. He was hired to protect her garden, after all, not to destroy it. She was demanding that he pay for the damages and threatening to engage the town constabulary in enforcing her demands. Staven was silent as he sullenly retrieved his rope and slunk out of the remains of her garden with his head bowed. There was nothing he could say to this woman in her hysterical state, and, of course, there was no way he could pay for the damages. Pest extermination was not a high-paying occupation. He was counting on this job to reduce his sizable debt, not to increase it. He bumped into another problem before he was even out of range of Mrs. Marlin's screeching voice. Randy, the centaur Staven had hired to haul the chicken away, was standing by his wagon with his arms folded, informing Staven that he still expected to be paid. Staven gave Randy a withering look and assured him that he'd bring the money tomorrow. At least, Staven hoped it was a withering look. It's hard to act tough around someone with a bad attitude who is quite literally as big as a horse. And for those unfamiliar with the species, all centaurs have bad attitudes. Staven was going to have to quickly and quietly leave town. Not only were centaurs large and grumpy, they also tended to hang with herds of their large and grumpy friends. Yet, despite all of this, Staven had more significant concerns on his mind. Something, or someone, had caused him to shout during the hunt. Nothing like this had ever happened to him before, and he was scared. He was afraid that he might have a demon in his head. Staven pulled his hood down and stared at his feet as he shuffled towards home. Head demons attracted soul reapers, and, well, no one wanted a soul reaper around. Staven shivered despite the hot summer weather and quickened his pace. It was a long walk home, but Staven had so much on his mind that he was startled when he realized he was already halfway there. Most people would still be shaking with the terror of barely surviving hand-to-hand combat with a dragon. He could be expected to be depressed about losing everything he had worked for and scared of the angry mob that would likely appear at his home by morning. He should be stressing about how he was going to disappear and where he was going to go. Instead, he was consumed by his unexplained outburst. The more he thought about it, the more he recalled feeling as though someone had been watching him over the past few weeks. It was as though somebody was there but wasn't. He couldn't explain the feeling, but his anxiety grew with every step. Finally, he reached a secluded stretch of the road, far from any prying eyes or ears. He set down his satchel, rope, and sword, spread out his arms, and said with trepidation, "All right, come out and talk to me." He heard nothing but the sounds of the forest. Staven felt a little more confident and raised his voice to say, "I mean it. I know you're in there. Say something." The woods grew slightly quieter, but there were still no voices in his head or emanating from his mouth. Staven was feeling better. Perhaps there were no demons in his head after all. Maybe he was just imagining it, or Perhaps he was just crazy, like those two old ladies in town. That's it. There were no demons. He was merely hearing voices because he was going mad. Stephen didn't really want to go insane, but it was far better than the alternative. He might become an annoyance to everyone else, but those ladies with their imaginary voices seemed happy enough. No one, not even the Soul Reapers, bothered them. He jumped up and down laughing and began dancing and singing, "There are no demons in my head. I'm going crazy nuts instead." Not even the crickets were chirping by the time he finished, and he saw two small, terrified animals staring at him from the shadows of the trees.
"Bwah! What are you looking at?"
he shouted while waving his arms at the rodents. The two squirrels disappeared in a flash of smoke and sparks as crackling static charges on their bushy tails erupted from their fear.
"What the heck were those?"
"Squirrels, of course."
"No, man, those were no squirrels. They looked like they were electric."
"No, they're squirrels, not squirrels."
"What are squirrels, anyway?"
yelled Stephen as he jumped up, flailed his arms, and searched for the person he knew wasn't going to be there.
"Get out of my head, demon!" yelled Stephen.
"I'm not a demon, I'm a boy, and you can't tell me what to do. You're my dream," he replied to himself.
"Oh no, this is my life, and you're my nightmare," answered Stephen.
"I am not a nightmare," he yelled back at himself,
"and you just shut up!"
Stephen felt as though he were going to cry, which was not a sensation he could recall feeling in years. It was as though he had just insulted himself. He wasn't sure what part of him was real and what part was the demon, so he just sat down on the ground in silence to try making sense of it all. A few minutes later, he said, "Is it my imagination or is our butt wet?" "Yeah, it rained this morning, and I must have sat in a soggy spot.
Hey, you can feel my butt?"
"Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of gross, isn't it?" "Gee, do you think? It's bad enough that you're in my head. Stay away from the rest of my body, you little newt." Stephen stood up and moved over to sit on a dry rock. This was getting worse and worse. He was sure that the Soul Reapers would arrive at any moment and whisk him away to wherever they took possessed people.
They, for Stephen realized he was not truly alone, sat in silence for a few more minutes until he asked himself, "What's a newt?"
"Newts are dragon pellets," he answered.
"Pellets?"
"Yeah, you know, the little hard balls of poop that come out of dragon butts?" Stephen laughed, and while he wasn't sure, it felt as though the laughter came from both of them. "Hey, demon, do you have a name?" he asked.
"I'm not a demon. I'm a 13-year-old boy, and my name is Mark," the demon replied.
"What?" Stephen said incredulously. "I'm being possessed by a child demon?"
"I'm not a demon," answered Mark. "I'm just a kid having a bizarre dream. I've had dreams about this place for months, but this is the first time I've ever been a part of it. This is incredible!"
"Kid, this is no dream," answered Stephen. "This is my life. You're in my head, and I'd appreciate it if you got out now." "I can't believe I'm arguing with my own dream," said Mark in amazement. "But seriously, look around. You have dragons and centaurs and electric squirrels. This isn't real."
Yeah, it is," answered Stephen.
"And those are squirrels, not whatever squirrels are. Their bushy tails hold a static magic charge which lets them disappear and reappear a few yards away when they're startled.
What's a squirrel?"
"Squirrels are small, furry mammals that look a lot like your squirrels, but without the magic," answered Mark. "In fact, nothing in my world is magical. If this isn't a dream, then I don't think I'm on Earth anymore."
His voice was starting to quiver as though he was beginning to fear that he wasn't safe at home in his bed. Stephen felt Mark's panic surge through him and quickly said,
"Hey, kid, I'm sure this is just a dream for you. Perhaps you somehow get in my head when you're sleeping, but this really is Earth, and you really do need to get out of here."
"What do you mean?" "I'm guessing you don't have Soul Reapers where you live," answered Stephen. "They are the scariest beings imaginable and have been around forever. Every living creature is terrified of them, and there is no escaping if they come for you."
"What do they do?" asked Mark.
"No one knows," answered Stephen. "They show up when someone gets demons in their head, and then that person disappears forever. There are lots of different theories about what they do to the possessed person, but none of them are pleasant. Now they were both shaking with fear. We'd better get home and pray that you wake up and leave before the soul reapers arrive, said Stephen as he stood and gathered his things. Do you think we could talk in my head instead of out loud? He asked. They tried and felt considerably less conspicuous conversing mentally rather than verbally, except for the time when Mark suggested that Stephen pinch and slap himself to try to awaken him. It was painful. Stephen looked like an idiot while doing it, and it didn't work.
They spent the remainder of the trip home silently getting to know each other. Stephen was trying to figure out what to do with his life. He was 17, lived in a world of magic where everyone other than him possessed incredible powers, and had no family who wanted to have anything to do with him. He had the magical prowess of a 2-year-old. Sure, he could use enchanted objects and wield a magic sword, but that was about it. He couldn't even transform raw food into a meal. Stephen had to cook physically. It was embarrassing, and it made him an outcast.
His only skills were being muscular and agile, which were still valuable traits for specific tasks. For example, all the magic in the world couldn't remove a dragon from your garden. The only way to do that was to capture or kill it physically. Or to whack one with your sword and have it run around like a chicken with its head cut off, noted Mark. What's a chicken? Never mind. Mark was a boy from Cincinnati, and today was his 13th birthday. He played soccer, but preferred to hang out with his friends playing video role-playing games, playing fantasy board games, or reading fantasy novels. Most of these terms were meaningless to Stephen, but Mark assured him it didn't matter. Mark's home was similar to this, but less tropical, more populated, with entirely different animals, and, as previously noted, it had no magic. Stephen's limited magical abilities became apparent when they arrived at his street. Every house was immaculate, except his. They were all set back from the road, with manicured lawns, perfectly painted picket fences, and pristine gardens. They also chose to use their front yards as their living spaces, with pools, hot tubs, and patios right out in front. The house on the corner was particularly spectacular. It almost looked like a small castle from a fairy tale. Stephen's house, on the other hand, had peeling paint, a weedy vegetable garden, and a small lawn in need of mowing. I can't just enchant the paint to stay shiny or the grass to grow to the perfect length like everyone else, he muttered. I have to do the work myself. It stinks. Mark could feel Stephen's gloom and could see his neighbors' reactions as they arrived. News of the rampaging headless dragon evidently traveled faster than them. He was feeling bad for Stephen and was attempting to think of a kind thought when a cold chill went through their body and the whole world seemed to slightly dim. It was as though a dark cloud had passed overhead, but the sky was still clear. Stephen looked up and saw a tall, thin figure approaching from down the lane. Then he turned and saw another and another. The strangers were wearing gray hooded robes, but you could see parts of their faces in their hands. They all looked impossibly old, with dark red, leathery skin tautly stretched over emaciated bodies.
Mark thought they looked like skeletons, shrink-wrapped in aged leather, and didn't need to ask what they were.
The Soul Reapers had found them. Stephen slash Mark tried to keep their distance, but another Soul Reaper appeared behind them. Suddenly, they were surrounded by 4 of the terrifying monsters in an ever-shrinking circle.
Mark, buddy, you'd better wake up and get out of here for both our sakes, muttered Stephen with a shaky voice. I'm trying. Believe me, I'm trying, Mark cried. But how do you wake yourself up from your own dream? I don't know, but we're doomed if you don't figure it out right now, cringed Stephen.
The Soul Reapers were so close that Stephen could see their dark, hollow eyes and smell their musty aroma. They all simultaneously reached out their right arms and placed their hands on his shoulders. Stephen tightly closed his eyes at the last minute as he felt their claw-like fingers grasp his body. He expected to feel his skin burn off or something equally terrible to occur, but nothing happened. 10 seconds passed, then 20, then 30, and still he just stood there. Stephen peeked out of one eye and saw his street. Then he opened both eyes and realized he was standing alone in his yard. There were no soul reapers anywhere, just his neighbors hiding in their houses, nervously peering out of half-closed curtains.
"We did it, Mark! We did it!"
Stephen thought to himself. But there was no one there.
The voice in his head was gone, and while he was undoubtedly relieved, he also felt more alone than ever before.
Stephen headed into his house, thinking, "I can't believe it. The demon is gone, the soul reapers have left, and I actually missed that little newt. I must be going crazy."